You're listening to Hidden Mysteries Radio, discussing the topics no one else dares to. Good evening, everybody. This is the Wednesday edition of Hidden Mysteries Radio for Wednesday, October 21st, 2015. How's it going, Ghost?
It's a happy Woden's Day for us both.
It is a Woden's Day, and we're about to talk about Woden's Day for just a minute before we get into our big topic of the night. Tonight, we're kind of in the, as you know, the listeners can probably tell from the intro music to the show, we're in the Halloween spirit this week, aren't we, Ghost?
Why not?
Why not?
I'll do something different.
Yeah. It's definitely one of your less boring holidays.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Well, anyway, and everybody make sure and tune in Friday for our regularly, or well, no, I guess this is a regularly scheduled show, but for our
Friday show.
Friday show, and we're going to be talking about several cool things. We're going to talk about, among other things, Rothschild owns all the property in Israel. By all the property, well, you'll see what we mean when you come to the when you come check the show out. People who follow me on Twitter might go check out my tweets. I tweeted out a little article about that. We're going to talk about this scam between Jewish drug manufacturers and the Greek government, where they're trying to defraud the Greek people out of a whole lot of money and a whole lot of jobs.
Like they are here.
Yep. And we're going to talk about, well, Ghost, you probably heard it. We're going to talk about this governor of Minnesota said that people who don't want a bunch of Somalian rapapes, like by the hundreds of thousands moving into their towns, that they're bad and they can just get out. And he's doubled down on that. But the interesting thing is, after I told you about that, another person in a similar position in Germany told a group of people there that exact same thing. And we'll talk about that. We'll talk about whether or not all that's a coincidence. And we have several other stories. So, make sure and tune in, Friday. And also, I got suspended on Twitter again today. Anybody who follows me and hasn't noticed that I'm suspended yet, they can go follow my new account. It's at Azmador2, Azzmador number 2. And I'll post a link to that in the story. Well, Ghost, let's talk about Woden's Day. You ready?
What about Woden's Day?
Well,
one of the honorable gods.
Yes, they are. They are. Friend of mine, whose show I was on, Monday night, Pat Privilege, he's the host of Viral Vigilante over at Renegade Broadcasting. He linked me to this little article on Renegade Tribune this morning. The title is See You on Woden's Day. And it says, like somebody lacking his front teeth, Germans have a day in the middle of the week without a name. That day in question is Mittwoch. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Which literally means midweek. Of course, this is not a name, but just a utilitarian description. Sometime in the Middle Ages, the Christian authorities decided it was a good idea to remove the name of the main Germanic god from the week, so Wodenstag, from Old High German, was erased from the minds of the German folk. They succeeded also in Iceland, of all places, where the day in question was renamed something I can't pronounce, and also translated as midweek, which is quite paradoxical, taking into account the questionable pagan revival this country has been going through in the last few decades. Fortunately enough, they failed in countries like Norway, Denmark, Sweden, England, etc. And as we know, they obviously failed in England, Ghost, because we still have Wednesday, which is Woden's Day. Absolutely.
And we've got Thor's Day.
And we've got
Fry's Day.
Freya's Day. It's absolutely. And it came out as an accident. It just happened. But fortunately, both of our shows every week fall on one of the days dedicated to the old gods.
Isn't it amazing how our tradition keeps coming back at us over and over and every different angle?
It's in the blood, man.
And blood's in the, it gets in the calendar. It's in the days of the week.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's in the blood that, you know, even after centuries of having it suppressed and people not even knowing what any of it means or the significance of it, we just won't let go of it.
Well, yeah, they've tried to suppress it since the Dark Ages.
Yeah. Well, you know,
they're real good about suppressing knowledge.
Right, right. Well, you know, just about every, even the tradition, I mean, tradition, even the Christian holidays are, have wrapped a bunch, all, you know, the pagan traditions in them because they couldn't completely stamp that stuff out. There were some things that the old pagans, our ancestors, were so passionate about that if they'd just taken that all the way away, they would, you know, Christianity would never have taken hold no matter how many of them they killed.
Christmas would not be.
Right, exactly. The old Tannenbaum, the Christmas tree.
All bogus when it comes to the birth of Jesus.
Right, it has nothing to do with it. Well, what about Easter? You know, the Easter bunny and the Easter egg? That's Estri.
Yeah, it's oysters.
Well,
the egg.
Estri, the egg, yeah. But Estri I believe, a Celtic goddess of fertility. Ooh. And she takes this goes into our
birth
topic.
Of spring.
Yeah, this goes into our main topic tonight. She's a shapeshifter, and the main animal that she shapeshifts into is a rabbit, you know, the symbol of fertility.
Yes.
And these fertility gods, and not only in European mythologies, but in just about every mythology of every civilized, by civilized, I mean, you know, people who tilled the soil and that sort of thing, the fertility gods were very, very important to them. And a lot of the things, there are so many symbols and so many names, and like you said, the calendar and all kinds of other things that we just take for granted. That
children of Woden are the chosen people. They're the chosen ones.
Is that the tribe of Dan?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, because Odin is, that's Odan, right?
Odan is the word in the Bible.
Yeah, and we are going to have to do, it'll be an excellent topic, but when we do it, I want to plan to do at least a 2-hour show, so, and, you know, I'll get a lot of material together where we'll do a really formal thing because it'll be such an interesting show.
He was the only few of the tribesmen that realized this ain't the promised land. He went looking for it, I think.
Right, right. But what I was going to say was, you know, all these gods, we've talked about this
before. Father worship.
Well, all the gods in the different mythologies, whether you're talking about Greco-Roman mythologies, whether you're talking about Norse and Celtic mythologies, or even Chinese and Hindu and Buddhist mythologies, that kind of thing, they're all basically the same gods. And I think that has a lot to do...
Shape-shifting.
Right. But I think that has a lot to do with what Carl Jung referred to as the archetypes. You know, it's something, whether it's spiritually embedded in us or genetically embedded in us.
Christian don't want you to know about all this stuff. Is Jehovah is that blue god with all the hands over there in India, in India, in the Hindu religion.
By Jove. Well, yeah. And another thing that I guess people who are really doctrinaire about whatever their particular denomination's doctrine is, imagine that, being doctrinaire about a doctrine.
They want to bash it.
They don't want you to know
astrology, but they still go to Moon Day and Soon Day.
Well, they don't. Yeah, but they don't want you to know that most of their symbols are actually, if not derived from, they are the same as the same symbols that appear in all the other religions. For instance, the world tree. You know, you've got the world, what they call the world tree in the Celtic mythologies. You've got, you've got the,
Yggdrasil,
you've got the, you've got that, the tree of, yeah, Yggdrasil, it starts with a Y, Yggdrasil or something like that. But the one you're talking about is the Norse one. And that's the tree of life, the tree of the universe.
Which is what Kabbalah is based in.
And you've got the cross, which is the tree of life, because the cross, what happened on the cross is what provides
the tree
eternity.
Of
well, no, it's the tree of resurrection, the tree of life, the cycle
tree
of life.
Had nothing to do with it.
Death, rebirth, and all that. Huh?
Tree didn't have anything to do with it.
Well, it's the symbol does. But anyway.
Yeah, but in the Judaism, the Kabbalah is the tree of life.
Yeah.
Which is manifested through Leonardo da Vinci's Vitruvius Man.
Yeah. Well, okay. I tell you what, Ghost.
We already started a whole new subject.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're only 10 minutes into this thing. We got an hour. We, you know, we can talk for a little bit
about the shapeshifters and go back to anything.
We're going to get onto the shapeshifters here in just a minute. But a little further down here it says, why calling it midweek for woad's sake? It says Christians, like the members of the other two Abrahamic religions, start their week on Sunday, the day of the Lord. The scheme is similar to the one originated in ancient Babylon, which both Greeks and Romans also shared. At some point, some 100 years ago, this was officially changed to Monday as the first day of the week, as in the international standard ISO 8601, in the whole of the Western world. However, one can still see the old arrangement in some contemporary calendars in which the week starts on Sunday. That's where all my calendars start.
All American calendars that way.
Yep. In spite of all this, the name Middle of the Week remained otherwise in the Christian countries in which it replaced the old name for Wednesday, even if the Monday as first day of the week arrangement became much more widespread. And he says, now check how perfidious these Christian moguls were. Instead of replacing Woden by some other deity, be it a saint or whatever, they left the German Wednesday practically unnamed. They just left a vacuum, an unfilled void. Why? I guess Wodenstag, which that's German for Wednesday, became at some point a sort of contender day to the Christian Day of the Lord, since Wotan carried much more spiritual weight for the diehard pagan peasantry of the early Middle Ages. On this in particular respect, it makes me think of Wotan as being the unnameable one, the ancient dark god, as it is presented in the 1960s film by Ingmar Bergman, The Virgin Spring. It is tantalizing to think that these Christian bishops still felt some kind of fear for the deity, so they opted, in the case of German, Icelandic, and Finnish calendars, to leave the day emptied of any name whatsoever. Now, this is a good long article.
Just play Woden as a dark god's kind of stupid.
Yeah. Well, right. But anyway, this is a nice long, well, not long, it's probably a medium length blog post. And I'll link it for all of our listeners to read. It's a real interesting little read. You'll probably want to read it too, Ghost.
Yeah.
But anyway, and this is Renegade Tribune is I guess what would you call it, the sister website to Renegade Broadcasting, which is the show that I was the guest on for the full 3 hours Monday on Viral Vigilante.
You didn't write stuff to say?
No. Actually, the funny thing is they do one show a night. And, or to my knowledge, and, the guy didn't explain it to me, which I'm not blaming him. I probably should have assumed, but, I didn't know the show was timed because I'd listened a couple times before and he'd say, okay, we're going a little extra or whatever. And at the end, he asked me to make a final point or about something and, you know, give out the website again and all that. And my point took so long that Blog Talk TV cut us off. I had no idea it was set up to automatically do that, but it did. No big deal. But no, I didn't run out of anything. Matter of fact, I could have gone a lot longer. Can you imagine that?
No, I can imagine that. I can imagine you run out of words to say.
Yeah. It's hard to imagine me running out of 4-letter words to say. But anyway, I guess that's what makes me good, a good choice for this.
Yes, it is.
But
well, I keep telling you, people want to hear you. They don't want to hear you reading.
Right. Well,
you can surmise it better than you can read it.
Yeah, I've got a
than they can say it.
I've got a line of bullshit so long that it's never, nobody's found the end of it yet.
Hey, that's true Texan for you.
Yeah. But anyway,
never run out of a tall tale.
Right. Well, we're going to take a break. And when we come back,
shapeshift into another topic.
That's right. We're going to go straight into shapeshifters. So everybody, check out the sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Truth seekers and freedom-loving Texans, HiddenMysteries.com is the place to find those hard-to-locate books for your research. HiddenMysteries.com has the largest and most diverse knowledge-based selection on the Internet today. Be sure and visit HiddenMysteries.org for over 12,000 free articles for truth seekers. Visit HiddenMysteries.com today or call 903-876-3256 for a free catalog.
Just keeping it Texas on RFT. Just keeping it Texas the way it ought to be. As Texas as chili and barbecue. Keeping it real for me and you. Just keeping it Texas on RFT. Radio Free Texas, where you wanna be. RadioFreeTexas.org, bringing Texas to the world.
Okay, I hope everybody enjoyed the nifty commercials. I know we enjoy them, don't we, Ghost?
Oh, we always do.
Anyway, my favorite one is the Radio Free Texas one, where Red sings that jingle about just keeping it Texas. That guy's a heck of a musician. You know that guy personally?
No, huh?
Oh, okay. Well, anyway.
Wish I did.
Yeah, boy, he's a good singer. And whoever plays the steel guitar knows what they're on that, knows what they're doing, too. That sounds like some really authentic old-school country.
It's about Austin.
Yep. Well, if it comes out of Texas, it just damn near can't be bad.
That Austin scene is really something.
Yep.
Fabulous.
Yep. All right. Well, let's get into the topic. We promised the listeners we were going to talk about shapeshifters, and that's what we're going to do. Now, shapeshifters, I don't know all that much about them other than the pop culture stuff. Ghost knows a lot more about the topic than I do, and but I do know that the idea of shapeshifters is older probably than the written word. Wouldn't you say, Ghost?
Yes, it's as old as what? The Bible, you know, it's older than the Bible, but at least we got it documented that far back.
Right.
In writing.
Right.
And possibly even older than that if you talk about some of the Egyptian hieroglyphs or some of the Sanskrit out of Mesopotamia.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I was a kid, I remember going to the library, and sometimes I'd go up to the library and read, you know, go through all kinds of books during the day. And I remember reading one about, it was written probably for the level of, you know, teenagers, and it was about the history of the mythology of vampires and all that. And like the vampire myth, if I recall correctly, originated, or the earliest written myths about vampires they could find originated like in ancient Babylon.
Your demonology is based a lot upon the shape-shifting concept.
Sure, sure. Oh,
so
yeah.
If that is correct and there are demons, then there is shape-shifting.
Right.
Now, we don't know, and it's probably not going to be known in our lifetime, but is the shape shifting actually the physical shape changing, or are they clouding the mind's eye and we see what they want us to see?
Like in They Live.
They Live. That's a good example. It's how they put on the glasses to change the eyes.
Right, right. Yeah, like they're in
the
They Live.
The person didn't actually change.
In They Live, they were beaming out a signal that would. You
know, this came real popular here recently under David Icke and his, reptilian theory, the shape-shifting forward got moved forward.
Right.
But the reptilian shifting is as old as mankind, if not older.
Now, I'm not all that familiar with Ike's reptilian stuff, like somebody who actually followed Ike would be. Now, is his reptilian theory, are these reptilians aliens, or are they another race that lives among us that...
He doesn't venture a guess on it. as far as he knows they're alien to humans, but whether extraterrestrial aliens, he doesn't venture a opinion. His personal opinion, from what he's read, he thinks are from the inside the Earth.
Okay.
Which follows what the Hopi and the Mayans used to teach.
Yeah, now we talked about that on last week's show. Anybody that wants to listen to a couple of guys who are really way too tired to be doing a show talk about Hollow Earth, that's last Wednesday's show, Hollow Earth.
The Mayans have a legend that there was this guy named Hashatan.
Uh-huh, Satan. Which,
yeah, I mean, they called him Shaitan, though.
Right.
Which is kind of surprising, since that's the biblical term.
Mm-hmm.
That he was creating genetically, he was a genetic scientist, and he's creating these mindless blobs, which could be interpreted as shape-shifting, but he was banished to be under the earth. And we all know he didn't stay there, and he's obviously the master of his disguise. So is his disguise a shape-shifting, or the mind's eye being clouded?
Right, right.
That's what demonology is all about.
Sure. And that goes into kind of what we were talking about before the break, about all the various mythologies having the same characters. I mean, you know, they all have this scientist slash creator type character who gets banished to the underworld. Like in Greco-Roman mythology, his name's Vulcan.
Well, Saint Germain, for an example of more recent history, is considered to still be alive today.
Right.
Now, we don't recognize him because we don't know what he looked like back then, for one.
Right.
But if we say we knew what he looked like 40 years ago, would we know what he looked like now? Or would he be able to shape-shift or cloud our mind's eye into seeing something different?
Right.
You know, he was considered one of the good guys.
Well, by some he was. I mean, yeah. By most he was, but there, you know, there's varying opinion on that. But Saint Germain was an interesting character. We're going to have to do a show. We ought to do a Wednesday show on him.
Probably
sometime.
Will one of these afternoons.
But you know, yeah, Saint Germain wrote a huge treatise on alchemy. I think it's called Saint Germain on Alchemy, and I read that when I was about 18. And he was into just about all kinds of stuff, really. The comical character of Baron von Munchausen is probably, at least to a large degree, based on Saint Germain's exploits, wouldn't you say?
Yes. He's a very interesting read, very interesting study, and he was an alchemist.
All right.
And alchemy is another topic we'll probably touch on one of these days.
Yeah.
On the shape-shifting, though, you know, you can go back to the ancient biblical text where the Hashatan was banished to do his experiments under the earth. Inside the earth, not to come on top of the top earth and do it. It's basically the same thing the Old Testament said. He banished that serpent to crawl in his belly in the earth. You're just getting a Cliff Notes version of what the Mayan had a longer version of.
Yeah.
So it's basically the same shape-shifting thing all around.
Yeah.
And I've read a Assembly of God preacher one time that was in the Philippines. Now, you got to understand the mindset of Assembly of God folk. Anyway, he thought he could cast out demons.
Right.
And he decided he would cast his demon out of some girl down there. And he did cast it out for a second or two. And he came out and beat the crap out of him and went back in.
Yeah.
Now, was that entity in her able to shapeshift her into different beings and different things?
Yeah. Or did she have some kind of psychic power that was being unleashed because of some type of mental disorder that was breaking down barriers between...
Well, she was a victim of this thing, whatever
right,
it was.
Right, which, you know, which was breaking down the barriers between the id and the superego, and who knows what could happen, or, you know.
And a lot of times, even like talk about shadow people and different things, maybe you're seeing a shape-shifting into different dimensions.
Yeah, it could be. I tell
time
you.
Time warp, and you're seeing things that, what if we're seeing our future sometimes, and we're totally different than... What would it look like now?
Well, you know, now that you mention that, you know, when we talked about our limited paranormal experiences on the show, what was it called, Spaceships and Shadow People? I discussed that one time that I saw those shadow people, and that's an interesting idea that you bring up. But if I apply it, if I were to apply that idea to the experience that I had, I'd have to say. It makes me think that it was some kind of shape shifting through dimensions from the past because of the way that they were so arboreal. Like our evolutionary ancestors might have been.
Well, actually, a ghost or an apparition would be shape-shifting from the dead into a visible image that you can see.
Yeah, but remember, I told you about how these appeared to have nests up in the trees that they were in.
Yeah.
And that made me think of, you know, Carl Sagan wrote a book years ago that I think that may have been the title of it, something about our arboreal ancestors. And he talked about how, you know, our humanity's ancestors most likely would have dwelt in trees during the day, because when it was warm during the day, their chief enemies were reptiles. And so they'd be up in the trees during the day when it was warm and the reptiles were moving around, and they'd come down at night when it was cold or cooler and the cold-blooded reptiles would be moving slower. And as an interesting aside, he said that that's probably the best explanation that we have for the experience that just about everybody has, at least when they're young. A lot of people will have it throughout their lives where you'll be asleep and suddenly you'll have the sensation that you're just falling. And he said that would be like a defense mechanism that's left over for when you're sleeping up in the tree so that you wouldn't fall out of it. But anyway, back to the shapeshifters. Yeah. You know, looking at pop culture, there's so much pop culture, based around shapeshifting characters that go way back into antiquity. Another term for a particular type of shapeshifter, and that's a shapeshifter that will shift into one particular form of or another of an animal, is lycanthrope. You know, you have your werewolves, your werebears, and all, you know, that kind of thing. And that's shapeshifting, of course.
Now, I think the humanity or human race is more likely to be influenced by the reptilian.
Right.
As far as shapeshifting, or by influence through history, or because our brain has a reptilian part, our spine has reptilian parts. You know, our part of our body comes from the reptilian skeleton.
Sure.
And so we have a close affinity with them. So what we see sometimes as shapeshifting may be mitochondrial vision.
Right. Could be, yeah.
Yes.
Explain to the listeners what mitochondrial vision is.
It's a DNA, and according to a rabbi that I trust very much and his studies into Kabbalah, was that people who see their past histories, past lives, are actually seeing the mitochondrial DNA memory of their relatives.
Right.
Because you carry all your relatives' memory in those DNA, in those mitochondrial DNA into the body.
Yeah.
So if enough of them collect on the same topic, you could be able to see in that past life.
And that idea coalesces around a lot of stuff that we've already talked about. For instance, the Jungian archetypes. The Jungian archetypes could easily be due to this mitochondrial vision you're talking about, where these things that have been viewed as mystical experiences and worshipped and all that by your ancestors, and things like these pagan traditions that we were talking about during the Woden's Day article that we were discussing, are stored in your mitochondria, and that's why it's hard to get rid of these old traditions from particular peoples. What do you think?
I agree. I was looking for a statement here that I said, because we're so serpent-oriented, you know, we're very close to being a cold-blooded animal.
Yeah, some of us are cold-blooded animals. Some of us are cold-blooded animals.
Yes, I've seen Mr. Crane, Dick Cheney.
Yeah.
And he's colder than cold-blooded than we know, because he's working on a mechanical heart.
Well, if you want to get a good idea, of course, I hate to mention the names of books that are not sold by HiddenMysteries.com, but if somebody wants to get an idea of what we mean by a reptilian human, a cold-blooded human, one book that you could check out, you could find it free online, and just read a couple of chapters of it. The Sociopath Next Door. I mean, psychology has really nailed these people who operate straight out of their reptilian center.
It's not the psychology we know today. Psychology of today is just a made-up medical bullshit.
Right, right.
They create psychology nowadays just to have a job.
Right.
You created psychology for psychology's sake. It's not like it was when Jung was studying it.
Right.
Well, there's a lady that we do print her book, and it's called, she wrote the book, The Body Snatchers.
Uh-huh.
And she was into this reptilian shape-shifting in her life, and she was tormented by them.
Yeah.
And she wrote a book, and Jesse Ventura had her book as a listing on his show, and they discussed it for a full show. And I don't understand a lot of the first book, but I understood this lady was tormented by these beings. And the first book made no sense, but the second book she wrote ties it all together, what she was trying to get across in the first. And the way she did it was kind of odd, but it was her book. But she wrote it all down, what they were doing, and their plans to reintroduce themselves on this planet and take back over.
Yeah.
Which is basically what X-Files was about. It's what They Live was about. And I think we're being told ahead of time.
The old TV series. Yes. The old TV series V, that's what it was about.
Exactly.
They made a new series of that, but I haven't watched it.
I had neither.
But the old 70s series was a real classic. But yeah, the reptilian thing really goes through our culture because, I mean, who was it in the garden that was tempting Eve?
On this reptilian study, I did a website, and it's still up and running. And I haven't updated it in years because there's only so much research you can do into it, and then you kind of hit dead ends. But it was all on the reptilian agenda.
What's the URL?
Reptilianagenda.com.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I think I have that one linked over at asmodor.com.
And it's all the research we could find online at the time. We also put together a set of books that what we call it's all the reptilian connections we could find in writing to man. What are these connections? Whether it's serpent gods, serpent worship, serpent lore, serpent biology, serpent evolution. We came up with 1,600 pages of books.
Well, let me ask you this, Ghost. One thing that's occurring to me as I sit here and I think about what to ask you is that all these various shapeshifters that we're discussing, whether we're talking about reptilians or the They Live aliens or vampires or werewolves or any of it, one thing that they all seem to have in common is that they feed on humans. That they, whether they actually feed physically on the human, like a werewolf does, or whether, in something like maybe Invasion of the Body Snatchers, they feed on the psychic energy like that, or, like with vampires, they're doing both. They're feeding on your blood literally, but they're feeding on your, soul in another sense, because
Amy Besant wrote a book about trying to guard against it called Psychic Defense.
Yeah. Psychic Self-Defense. Yes. Right. Yeah. I'm familiar with that book. Do you sell that book?
Yes, we do.
Oh, okay. Cool. That's one that, I don't know that
I
read.
Many people understand she was a theosophist. She was also a natural healer and a psychic.
Are we talking about Blavatsky? I didn't hear the name.
Annie Besant.
Annie Besant. Okay. B-E-S-A-N-T.
She was a follower of Blavatsky.
Right. Well, where do you think,
some of the best books written in our 19th century or the 20th century now, 1900s, were written by the theosophists.
Yeah.
They were.
Yeah. Who are a few famous theosophists other than Besant and Blavatsky?
Off the top of my head's Ledbetter.
Yeah. But, yeah.
And he was excellent.
When I wasn't, now who is the guy who, would have the, Edgar Cayce wasn't he somewhat involved with theosophy?
No, he was a Presbyterian.
Well, I knew that, but I mean, I thought he ran in those circles or something.
Well, he may have checked into them. He was not standoff. He didn't have prejudices against people,
right?
Except for Texas.
Yeah.
He came down here to do his brought his psychic work down here.
Yeah.
Somebody talked him into it about locating oil. And found out the hard way that it didn't work for profit.
Ah, I see.
Cost him some money.
Well, you know, that's one of the things that they throw at these psychics to disprove the psychics is they ask them, okay, why don't you guess the lottery numbers and just be rich, you know?
Well, Edgar Cayce's proven it. It's been documented. It was, I don't know about videotape, but they audio taped him every session he did.
Yeah, well, Cayce was certainly very, very interesting. Just real quick, and not all of our listeners are going to know who Edgar Cayce was. Real quick, tell them who Edgar Cayce was.
I don't know how you describe a man that did so much in such a short period of time.
Yeah, but I mean, tell him about how he would have these visions and stuff.
He would lay down and go into a trance-like state and be able to heal people. He could travel astrally across the country, across the airwaves.
Right.
And go tell somebody how to heal something.
Yeah.
He knew how to heal diseases and know how to heal ailments that the doctors didn't know how.
But he had a lot of, when he would do this astral traveling, he also had lots of visions of the past and the future.
Oh, yes,
right?
He did. He saw Atlantis in his future. He saw Atlantis and predicted it would be known again to mankind same year they discovered the Bimini Road.
Yeah.
So some people say, well, that must have been it. But no one's said that yet. But
well, have they discovered the Bimini Road?
Yeah.
Where is it?
Off the coast of Bimini.
Ah. But I mean, is it underwater or what? Yeah.
It's the one that's underwater that travels out into the Caribbean there.
So he says that they would find Atlantis when they found that.
Yes.
Well, you know, there have been, back in the 70s or 80s, there were some articles in, like, a National Geographic that was asking where these underground structures that, you know, some deep probe, sea probe had found, you know. I mean, they had kind of asked it tongue-in-cheek, but they said, could this be Atlantis? You know, so maybe they did. Who knows? And they just don't know it.
I think there's probably more than one Atlantis at the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah.
And those tectonic plates broke that one time and changed the Earth's composition overnight, practically. There were probably a lot of things that fell into the sea.
Sure, sure.
Lemuria was another one, and forgot the one, there's two of them that fell off the coast of India and Australia area. So they've discovered the one that went off to India. They found it where it sunk.
Well, you know, there's so much interesting stuff from antiquity that most people don't know about. And when I'm on social media, and, you know, and this is not me being an elitist at all, you know, so don't take it that way, listeners, but I don't watch TV. I got sick of it years ago, and I rarely ever turn the thing on. The last couple of times I've watched TV, it was because a debate was coming on that had Trump on it, you know, and then I thought, well, this will be interesting, and it was. But anyway, the people have their minds consumed 24/7 with crap like the Kardashians.
Yeah.
And
mindless clutter.
Yeah, it's professional
you think
football.
About Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin, even my own father. He had Channel 13, educational channel. PBS systems. The surveyor did a study on it and came in from the year my dad was born. When he hit the eighth grade, he had the same as we get now, but that was back in 1970, though. I was in high school. The same as a 2-year college education. Now we can't get our kids out of high school with a 5th grade education.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Republicanism.
We've got kids that we graduate from high school who cannot read. Who cannot read. And this has been going on for 30, 40 years.
And then you wonder why some of these corporations want to bring in the Indians. Maybe they can read.
Well,
I don't agree with the premise, but.
Yeah, that's a bunch of crap, too. That's Ted Cruz and the corporations crap. I mean, I know for a fact because, you know, there's a lot of smart kids in my family, some of them going to college right now getting IT degrees, who, if we bring all these Indians in, they're going to be put out of a job. And the reason they're doing it is so that they won't have to provide them any benefits or any retirement or right. Pay them, you know, they can bring them over here. They know they'll do a half-assed job, but it doesn't matter because they'll get less than half-assed pay. And when they're done with them, they'll ship them back to India and bring some more over. But anyway, I mean, let's don't stray too far off the topic there.
You know, you're talking about the Leviathan.
Yeah.
Which is the corporation.
Yeah.
Which is another allegory for the shapeshifters.
Oh, it absolutely is, isn't it?
It certainly is.
I mean, the corporation.
What could be more shapeshifting than to give legal status as a human being to a corporation that cannot be tried for a crime because they're not a human being?
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, if I'm a human being, and if I take your money by fraud and the courts decide that I did that, I go to jail.
Right.
But if a corporation takes my money by fraud, even though the Supreme Court says that it's a human, it has all the rights of a human, apparently it has none of the responsibilities of a human, because the worst that might happen to them is if you have a shitload of money to sue them, they might
somebody,
have... Yeah.
You're going to jail for manslaughter.
Absolutely.
But if a company, because it will not repair its equipment, and their equipment explodes or breaks down and falls on a dozen people, and they kill a dozen people, nobody goes to jail.
Right.
But it's murder... For free.
But let's get back to, let me finish my point of what I was saying before. You know, everybody's eaten up with all this Kardashians and whatever bull crap is in the 24/7 news cycle.
The Billies in Louisiana.
Yeah, the Duck Dynasty and all that, and
cooking channels.
And what's the one, Little Honey Boo Boo, all that crap.
He's calling them the Days We're Alive. Remember those people?
Oh, yeah. They still have those too.
Same clutter, just a different era.
But the thing is, if they weren't doing that, if they were willing to pick up a book, there are so many beautiful, interesting things, both truth, fiction, and the things that we don't know whether they are truth or fiction that we call myth, that they could be learning about. I mean, look at the things that we touched on in the last 10 minutes. You got Atlantis, Lemuria, the ancient history, the shifting of the
late
tectonic
1800s and the early 1900 writings. You're not going to find it in new writings.
Right.
Because all of them, they're really just not as learned as the people who were they were writing them back then.
No, and
plus their eloquent use of English language is so much better than.
Yeah, and I'll tell you something else. And they're great movies. They got somewhat long and disappointing towards the end, but you know, the Lord of the Rings movies, as good as they are and all that, the majority of the younger generation that are really big into all that stuff have never even read the books. And you're missing out on most of the, as good as those movies are, and as long as they drew them out to make sure and get as many details in it as they can, you're missing out on most of the subtext and the morality play and all that that's in the books, and the allegories to our own myths and our own heroes in history that's in those books. And, you know, and there are just so many great things that are out there in books that have been passed down through written word. And there's so much, and the stuff's all available too. And there's so much good old music. I mean, they've been recording, we've been recording for over 100 years now. And there's so much good old music that, not only is good and entertaining to listen to, but is such a great anthropological history of your own people. You know, you go listen to some of the old hillbilly music or old
blues, bluegrass,
old bluegrass, country and western.
Go back to the Civil War and listen to the Confederate songs they sang.
Sure,
man,
sure,
they were out of this world.
Sure, yeah, and you know, everybody's sitting around. It seems like they're just dying to hear the next. Or, well, I mean, the media would have you believe they're dying to hear the next Rihanna or Katy Perry BS song about nothing. And, you know, I have to believe that a lot, you know, all this garbage in, garbage out, fluff, degenerate entertainment that passes for culture that we have nowadays is one of the reasons that the music industry is losing its ass.
That's why the politicians are what we get now, because it's the same kind of fluff.
Yeah.
There's no statesmen. There's no learned people there.
No, and we really need to...
look at Vitter this week.
Oh, Craig Vitter, what'd he do?
He's all backing up in the air about that, wanted his mistress to have an abortion. This is Mr. Conservative Family Values character.
Right, right.
So, talk about a shapeshifter.
Yeah.
He can shapeshift from a Christian to a sinner in an instant.
Yeah, Larry Craig shapeshifted from a conservative evangelical senator into a... licentious homosexual in a public restroom.
What Ted Haggard did.
The foot tapper. Yeah, Ted Haggard shapeshifted from a evangelical preacher into a homosexual drug addict sniffing methamphetamine off a male prostitute's hard cock.
Tony Alamo.
Yeah. Who's Tony Alamo?
He was an Assembly of God minister up in Arkansas that went across the state line to marry him and grab him a 13-year-old.
Female?
Yeah. Of course, crossing the state lines when they got him.
Yeah.
If he stayed in Arkansas, he probably got away with it.
Well, that's a violation of the Mann Act, isn't it?
Violation of the Little Girl Act, too.
Well, I mean, carrying minors across state or crossing state lines to
purpose of sex,
yeah. To be doing sex, yeah.
They got him.
Well.
But it's the same, and you wonder why we look at shapeshifters? They're around us every day. I mean, those kind of people are disguised as people in the know. They're people that are supposed to be our leaders, our ones we look up to, and you wonder why the kids don't give a damn about anything. They've got nobody to look up to. There's no heroes like Superman. No heroes like Gene Autry. They're all gone.
Oh, yeah. No more.
You're going to use McCain? Holy shit.
Yeah.
I use McCain for wiping paper.
No more John Wayne playing the Ringo Kid or any of that.
No, there's none of that. Or, you know, the movies back in the 70s, and they weren't what we're talking about, they weren't that great, but they were 100 times better than what you're seeing now.
Well, unfortunately, in my opinion,
you're under a little water again.
Yeah, there's something going on with the,
you just wiggled something wrong.
Is that better?
No.
Oh, crap. How about, let me pause. Ah, there we go. Is that better?
That's better.
All right.
You had to cut that out.
Oh, there it goes again. Okay. Hold on. I'm going to pause. I'm not doing anything. I'm going to pause this thing.
That shape-shifting influence you've got over there.
It's something in this, old, mixer. Anybody who didn't like what they just heard, there's a PayPal at the top right.
Please drop a couple hundred on it.
Yeah. Well, anyway, what was I saying, Ghost? Oh, yeah, the 70s movies. Unfortunately, in the late 60s and early 70s, and don't get me wrong, I really am a fan of some of these movies, but that's when the mythical cultural hero kind of went away, and we started having the anti-hero, you know, where the character, the hero, was always some kind of a sociopath, like James Bond or the Clint Eastwood's character in the spaghetti westerns and in High Plains Drifter, where you know, he's the hero just because he's the toughest guy who can kill everybody, and he takes what he wants and kills who he wants.
If you use a spread mythology now, I mean, total lies. Like, every cop show you see is all about how great the son of a bitches are.
Oh, I know.
And they're not that great. They're not that smart, number one.
Yeah, I was visiting someone the other day who was watching one of these CSI-type shows, and, you know, I saw it for about 5 minutes before I left, and they had all these cops in this room, and they had all these giant projectors, and they had all this different stuff on the walls, you know, for video surveillance and all this other. And they were talking about all this intensive, hardcore investigation they'd been doing on this topic and all the other people. And they had all the cops in there, and they'd all been working 24/7 for weeks to do this miraculous stuff. And I told the person there, I said, look, I have a lot of experience with the police, and this is complete fiction. You want to know what the cops do? They walk around with a file. They get up and they leave their office when they have to and take a report from people. And then they go and they do the best they can to ask the rest of the day off and push this work off on somebody else. And if you don't believe that, have a problem sometime where in order to file charges, there are multiple jurisdictions, and watch how they'll all refuse and pass the buck. For instance, if you ever get threatening calls from out of state, the police where the call originated from will have jurisdiction because the threat was made from there. That's the law. The police wherever you are will have jurisdiction because you received a threat there. And the feds will have jurisdiction because it crossed state lines. And you watch the ring around the rosy they'll put you in, pushing you back off on the other, saying, no, no, not us, them. You got to go to them first, and blah, blah, blah. You know, because I've been through this. And anybody who's ever had an out-of-state cyber stalker or any of that, that it got to the point, and that's not how I've been through this. I don't deal with cyber stalkers that way. Our fans have seen how I deal with cyber stalkers. But anyway, you know, like if you've got somebody calling and threatening to kill you or anything like that, and you've had to try to deal with it, you know how hard you practically have to go hire an attorney to make the police do their job on case anything where they can push it to somebody else. So it's all a myth, all this crap.
And the problem is after you finally get them to do the job, you find out they were too incompetent to do it right to begin with.
Yeah, well, see, all these cop shows.
I mean, the guy that's writing the cop show is much smarter than the cops.
Well, all these cop shows and prosecutor shows and all that, they're absolute.
Total mythology.
Well, they're not only mythology, they're a psyop. And let me go back to an old show to explain what the psyop is. One of the shows that, I mean, it's been on for so long, or it's not on anymore, but it was on for so long that, I remember having to watch it because my parents watched it. And that was called Law and Order. And now Law and Order was about a couple of cops and a couple of prosecutors. The two cops were flawless, and the prosecutors always had a righteous case.
Oh, yeah.
The criminal, the first criminal they picked was always the one, and it was all so cut and dry. Well, can you imagine how the average couch potato who's sitting there marinating his brain in fast food and light beer and 24 hours a day of television BS when he's not at work, how 3 or 4 seasons of watching Law and Order affects his worldview when he reads the news and sees that somebody's being charged with something. I mean, if they didn't already, this would definitely lead them to assume that they're all
guilty.
They
actually give you the idea that the prosecutors are concerned about you. Which
right.
is a total joke.
Oh, complete bullshit. The prosecutors.
Oh, you can't get one of them out of the whiskey bottle long enough to be concerned about somebody.
The prosecutors are always concerned about advancement. Everybody who works in the DA's office has one of two ideas. They either want to rack up a really, really badass conviction rate so that they can leave the prosecutor's office and be an extremely highly paid defense attorney, or. Because go open up your yellow pages under criminal defense attorneys and see how many of them have a huge quarter page ad where they're advertising former assistant district attorney. Yeah. Or they want to rack up a huge slate of victories so that political they can class. Run and become the district attorney, which can often be a springboard to other offices like
attorney general, to the governor,
up to county judge. District judge, attorney general, House of Representatives, all that. You know, he's not our representative, but he's the representative in the next district over that starts about a quarter of a mile to the north. Old Louis Gohmert's a real famous congressman out of Tyler.
Foot and mouth.
Yeah. But that's how he got going. He was a lawyer and prosecutor and then a district judge and then a U.S. House arrest.
I'd love to see a Perry Mason.
Perry Mason is the biggest bunch of mythological bullshit.
Yeah, but it was so well planned. Made the prosecutor look stupid every time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's easy to do when you're writing the dialogue for both sides. But anyway, you know, what was really going on Perry Mason was a bunch of stuff that non-degenerates would probably rather not hear about. but anyway, Raymond Burr had a little bit of sugar in his tank. But, supposedly the guy, the blonde-headed guy who played his, the detective that Perry Mason would always hire, that was allegedly his boyfriend. And, part of the proof of all that scuttlebutt was always, well, look at both of them on screen. Look how thick their makeup is. Raymond Burr insisted on those two having all that makeup. You know, I mean, they really do look like they're made up like women. But anyway, back to the shapeshifters. What about, how much do you know about vampirism, Ghost?
Well, I think it's the same thing. I think there are vampires. I don't really consider human blood. I think that's probably mythology. But there are vampires that feed on human traits, human psych, like I said, we were talking about earlier.
Psychic energy. Psychic vampires, yeah.
And they're definitely shapeshifting.
Well, but on the blood thing, though, what about old Remember old Countess Bathory, what they called her doing?
Yeah, she bathing
in baby's blood and drinking it and all that. And here's an interesting thing. Somebody linked me a story today that McDonald's got caught putting human blood in the batter they make their buns with. I mean,
you're talking about McDonald's, a hamburger joint?
Yeah. Isn't that odd? I mean, since we're talking about shapeshifters.
What kind of blood are they?
Human, apparently.
I wonder why I keep calling up here wanting donations.
Yeah.
My dad to quit giving them because Cheney's used enough up.
To McDonald's. Donations to McDonald's.
Huh?
Oh, you mean donations to the blood bank?
Yeah.
Well, you know, everybody's familiar with Twilight Zones, one of Rod Serling's ventures. Not as many people, I guess, at least who are younger than me, are familiar with his next series that was called, do you remember? The Night Gallery.
The Night Gallery. I was thinking about The Night Stalker with Darren McGavin.
That was a good series, too. I'll never forget when I was a kid watching him.
That was the predecessor to X-Files.
Yeah, watching him. Yeah, Kolchak was the guy's name. Mm-hmm. But watching him, they had one episode where it was like the Haitian zombies. And I remember at the end of it, he had to hold this zombie down and fill his mouth up with salt and sew his lips shut while the zombie was. It was a cool old show. But anyway, one of my the Night Gallery, it had, you know, your basic eerie paranormal episodes like Twilight Zone did, but it was a little more loose on its format because sometimes there would be a couple of shows and maybe a couple of little short vignettes. And I'll never forget one where, it was at the, like a little 2 minute long thing. I look for it on YouTube when we get done with the show because it's a good Halloweeny thing. And if I find it, I'll put it in the post.
That was his excursion into the color industry.
Right. Well, he had, that's what he was, the show was really starting to get ratings and he died of lung cancer while they were doing
Master
the show.
Master of Mall, I still think it'd be probably Alfred Hitchcock.
Yeah. Or whoever wrote Outer Limits.
I don't know who wrote that.
It was probably a lot of different sci-fi writers, you know, writing.
Alfred Hitchcock was not as well known here because he's from England. But.
Oh, it was a big show though. I remember, when I was a little kid, in the late 60s, I don't know if it was in reruns or if, it was still coming on. Because, you know, when I was a little kid, even though there was color TV, all my relatives all still had black and white TVs. But I remember Hitchcock, used to come on every week and they'd watch it. And then by the time I was in about first grade in the early 70s, Hitchcock came on channel 39 out of Dallas every weeknight. You know, they had a Hitchcock.
Get syndicated.
Yeah. But anyway, they had this little vignette at the end of one of the night galleries where this guy, played by Vincent Price, in a really nice tuxedo-looking suit and a long black cape, goes into the blood bank in New York City. Now, of course, he's dressed like Dracula, Vincent Price is, and he walks in, and he sits down at the blood bank, and they say, okay, well, here you go, sir, fill this out, and we'll get you ready for your donation. And he says, I'm not here to make a deposit. I'm here to make a withdrawal. He bared his fangs, you know. But I'll try to find that and upload it. But, yeah, the whole it's an interesting thing about the blood and the mitochondrial memory that you were talking about earlier. I wanted to bring this up. It's something that we've talked about on a couple of shows before, and you also brought up Rabbi Gilner earlier. And I believe you told me this is something that he told you. You know how in the Bible they talk about the Book of Life. Was it Rabbi Gilner who told you that the Book of Life is our DNA?
Yes.
So our DNA
in a recorded in there somewhere.
Right. And so our DNA not only, I mean, of course, everybody knows that biologically speaking, our DNA is not just what makes us look and think and live the way that we are and have the differences that we have from everybody else. It's also a biological history book. People who can look at the genome can look at it and tell who, you know, what type of people your ancestors were and stuff like that. But it could also be this book of life that if you knew how to decode it, would tell a lot more detailed stories about the history of your people. I mean, like, of things they did, things that they believed. It's the book of life.
He was talking, he was surmising because so many people thought they were Cleopatra in their past life.
Uh-huh.
Kind of a for a fad there for a while.
Right.
He said, well, they weren't all Cleopatra. They're all seeing Cleopatra from their point of view or their relative's point of view at that time.
Yeah.
Now, I never had an experience like that, even though I know one of my grandfathers, Mark Antony.
Yeah. How do you know this?
Trace it all back.
Oh, you go that far, huh?
All the way back.
Wow.
Once you get out of the United States, it's pretty easy.
Yeah. One of the problems, especially from the area that we're in here, if your people have been here a long time, one of the biggest problems about tracing your ancestry is the Civil War. Because during the Civil War, the Yankees burned down so many courthouses.
That plus entry into the United States was not done by educated people. They didn't know how to spell.
Right. Yeah, but what I mean is even like the marriage records and the birth records and stuff like that were all lost when they'd burned down a courthouse.
Yeah, they don't care. The Yankees just don't care.
Well, and as we discussed in the one of our first episodes titled Republic of Texas, the Yankees will come along and just steal all that stuff too.
Well, right, so you people don't realize that when you're born, you get a birth certificate from a hospital.
Yeah.
And that hospital, when it's recorded, is that the way it used to be? I think you have to record yourself now. Hospital won't do it. But it is sold. It is put into a certificate of deposit and sold.
Well, did you know that your book of life is also sold? No, seriously.
Think it's sold?
I know it's sold. Let me tell you who they sell it to. Ever since the mid-60s, and they're still doing it today, every single baby born in the state of Texas.
We're talking about the DNA.
Huh? We're
talking about the DNA.
Yep. The book of life.
Well, they are restoring it. They're saving it for something.
Every single baby.
There's no legal reason for them to save all this DNA.
Every single baby that's born in Texas has their blood drawn without even asking the consent of the parents and sent to University of Texas Medical Branch, the research hospital branch of University of Texas that does all the contracting for whatever kind of medical services the state wants, whether it's medical services for state veterans, state employees, or prison services. They're the ones that run the big John Seeley Hospital down in Galveston and all that. Now, they have all this stuff. Every baby that's born from whatever date in the early 60s that they started doing this, they have their blood samples. And for the last, 10 or 15 years, they've had, that we know, I mean, it could have been a lot longer, but for the last 10 or 15 years, they've pretty much had the human genome mapped to where they can go ahead and take all these samples and start mapping the genomes of each individual person. And they claim ownership of it. They own your genes. They own your DNA. Sounds like we might have some of those shapeshifters.
Well, I know there was some argument when the corporations decided they could copyright your DNA.
Yeah. Look at the things that they're copywriting. One of the interesting things is that they have suddenly gone into the business of copywriting the work of God or Mother Nature or whatever you want to call it. When Monsanto makes a hybrid vegetable, like say a hybrid Monsanto tomato, of course they copyright that the DNA of the tomato.
Poisoned tomato.
Huh?
I don't want any of their poison tomatoes.
No, but the thing is, when they do that, before they do that, the natural heirloom tomato that they make it out of, they'll go copyright that. And here's another interesting thing. Did you know that all these various strains of marijuana, the corporations, like the tobacco corporations and the pharmaceutical corporations, are all competing like hell. They have big labs of full of DNA scientists who are racing to map the genome of each different strain of marijuana, and whichever one gets a particular one mapped first, they run to the patent office and patent it. Because when marijuana becomes legal, they want to be the only ones to sell it to you. Now, how do you patent a strain of, I know how you do it. It's all bullshit. But I mean, on a logical level, how do you patent a plant, I mean, even a particular strain of a plant that has been around for hundreds of thousands of years.
I think you're saying the end of time's coming. I don't know about end of days, but end of time.
Well, there's definitely some kind of a happening. It sure is.
And the fact that I don't think there's any more shape-shifting going on now than there was in the past history. It's just that our communication of being able to discuss it with people from around the world all at once, like we're doing right now, has never been available before this. So when we talk about shape-shifting, we talk about reptilians, we talk about shadow people. We're not talking about it in our living room with 10 people. We're talking about it with thousands of people at once.
Well, you know, that's one of the things that in the evangelical churches that really stress end-time theology a lot, that's one of the things that they've always used that's really scared the church members about it must be the end times now, is because in the book of Revelation, one of the big clues is that when the Antichrist speaks, everybody in the whole world can see him and hear him. And, you know, when we started having satellite TV, everybody thought, okay, there it is.
Yep.
You know, but anyway.
Now that's not even working full time, so it can't be that.
Right. Well, if they shut down the internet, I guess that'll end that avenue of it too, huh?
Here's this big God's coming back on the sky with his big four square city. He's going to knock out a few satellites on the way down. So that nobody will be able to see him or hear him anyway.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, one of the things that caused me to break with the sect that I was brought up in was that by the time I was 15 or 16 years old, and I was going to these Bible study every Monday night, and it was always about Book of Revelation, I caught on pretty quick and went and found some seminary books to look into it with. I don't believe the Book of Revelation was intended to be a future prophecy of any kind. Everything that's in it was an allegory about something that was going on in the Roman Empire with the Christian church.
It already happened.
Yeah, and the reason that it had to be written that way is because the author, John, was a prisoner on the Isle of Patmos, and every single thing that he sent out was read by a Roman official and approved or not approved. And if he criticized the Roman government in clear layman's terms, the letters would have never made it to the recipients. Just like, you know, people in prisons today, if they're writing about stuff in a letter to that the prison doesn't want that kind of stuff communicated, they have to write it in some kind of a code, you know. Well,
my break with the cult, not just a sect, it's a cult, was whenever you watch them say and preach what they're supposedly their God told them, and they do the exact opposite in their daily lives.
Right.
Such as divorce.
Right.
What did St. Paul and Jesus say about it? They do exactly the opposite.
It's adultery. If you get divorced and
you think about it, it's adultery.
Well, yeah, that. But if you divorce your wife.
My ex is an adulteress.
Right. But if you divorce your wife and then you go and marry another woman, you're committing adultery. Christ said that specifically. He said the old law says that you may say, I divorced thee three times and go marry another woman. But I'm telling you that if you divorce your wife and marry another, you are guilty of adultery.
Yes.
And
as Christians, they're the first of the divorce courts, the first of the abortion clinics, too.
Well, here's
the Christians that are first of the abortion clinics.
And this was all the way back in the early 80s. You know, I was a member of the big Southern Baptist church that was right up the street from my house, and half the Baptist kids at the school that I went to went there, and the Baptists were really, really big on no premarital sex, try not to hold hands if you don't have to, and all that. I mean, you were even, I don't know if they still are, but back then Baptists forbade dancing, period.
So did the cult, Assembly of God.
And the interesting thing about all that was every white girl at my school who was pregnant went to my church. So, I mean, that you're right. There was a ton of hypocrisy. And if you slipped around up behind the old ladies. Not that, well, back then I consider them old ladies. I guess now I'd probably consider them young ladies. They were probably in their 30s or whatever. But if you slipped up behind the adult ladies after church or whatever and listened to them gossiping, they were all gossiping about which one of the other ladies at the church were cheating and who they were cheating with and all that. And I don't know. You know, every human beings are human beings, and I have a lot of friends both in real life and online who are Christians who don't fall in line with the kind of bullshit that we're talking about. Like, for instance, one guy, you know, like Cleric Preston, who said he was praying for you. I can't remember if he's Catholic or Orthodox, but he's really
true believers, but yeah. 99% are not. They're all
right.
What I call fence sitters, which is well, warm.
They're
get you out of my mouth.
They're sheep and they have bad shepherds. You know, that they're just the I really think that the biggest problem that we have in the world is that most people are followers. They want they're only comfortable when somebody's telling them what to think, what to do, and everything's laid out for them.
That's why the shapeshifting is so easy to influence them.
Sure, sure. Well, Ghost,
I agree with you.
Yeah, yeah.
And like I say, I think the mind-numbingness of television can you imagine when you were kids, so many hours on television taken up with just sheer bullshit politics? That's all it is. It's not real politics. Bullshit politics.
Oh, yeah. It's absolutely. It's constant brainwashing. They come up with a bullshit narrative. They put a really small frame around it that you're not allowed to think outside of. And they have two people who agree about 99% of everything.
Out of the blue, here is a problem.
Yeah.
That they broadcast and broadcast and broadcast. Of course, it's been a problem for 100 years.
Yeah.
But now all of a sudden, it's a big problem because they don't want you to pay attention to something else going on.
Right. Right.
Such as blowjobs in the presidential office.
And there's always the weird Hegelian dialectic, too. You know, every time we want to go bomb somebody, we do it because of human rights. You know, that kind of thing.
Or the children.
We're going to bomb them because they don't have their human rights. We're going to bomb the shit right out of them until they're fully
human rights.
That's
what I liked about Martin Luther King, is that speech he made. He woke up one day and realized the people doing the killing were his country.
Nah.
His own people were doing the killing.
Well, you probably should find out who he stole that from and give them the credit.
Well, I don't care. He said it. It was a beautiful speech.
Yeah. There's not one thing I like about Martin Luther King, but, you know, to each his own.
I even like Denzel Washington.
I like Denzel Washington, all right. And speaking of Denzel Washington, since he's a movie actor, and we're winding up the show now, everybody make sure and come back to HiddenMysteriesRadio.com Friday, and we're going to talk about all the things that I said we were going to talk about at the first of the show, but we're also going to talk about the new Star Wars movie and the Boycott Star Wars 7 hashtag that I participated in it, and a couple of my friends, one of the people I really like on Twitter is In Cultural Marxism, is what she calls herself. Her username is @Genophilia. That's @GENOPHILIA. She got that hashtag trending, and it's been covered on CNN and National Review and WorldNet Daily and all over the place. So, everybody come back Friday. We're going to talk about that. We're going to continue along with our spooky Halloween theme. And Ghost, what else? Is there anything else we want to talk about tonight?
Happy Halloween, folks.
Happy Halloween. We'll see y'all Friday.